Radio Prague News. The Brazilian president has called for greater cooperation between Czech and Brazilian investors during a visit to the Czech Republic. Politicians are discussing whether to go green and reduce the amount of paper used in parliament, and the Czech team is trailing Russia 2-1 in the Davis Cup quarterfinal in Moscow. Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has called for greater cooperation between Czech and Brazilian investors during a visit to the Czech Republic largely aimed to promote trade. In a joint press conference with his Czech counterpart Václav Klaus on Saturday, Lula called upon Czech businessmen to visit Brazil more frequently and said that Brazilian entrepreneurs should set out to familiarise themselves with the Czech economy. Brazil is Prague's top Latin American trading partner, with Brazilian exports of mostly agricultural goods in 2007 totaling 6 billion crowns, which is around $380 million. Politicians are discussing whether to go green and to reduce the amount of paper used in Parliament. A parliamentary committee is discussing whether to present MPs with the documents they're set to discuss in an electronic format rather than on paper. It's thought that each document set for discussion in Parliament is printed between 240 and 380 times. Furthermore, a document such as the recent public finance reform proposal comes in at over 2 kilograms in weight. Last year, it's thought that the Czech Parliament spent nearly 640,000 crowns, which is around $40,500 on paper. The proposal to make all documents available over the parliamentary intranet, however, still needs to be approved by lawmakers and could only be implemented in 4 months' time at the earliest. Russian duo Nikolai Davydenko and Igor Andreev battled from a set down to beat Czech pair Radek Štěpánek and Pavel Wiesner to lift their side 2-1 ahead in the Davis Cup quarterfinal in Moscow on Saturday. The hosts won 3-6, 6-3, 7-5, 6-4 in 2 hours 58 minutes to make it 2-1 in favour of Russia. On Friday, Marat Safin of Russia battled from 2 sets down to put his squad into the lead with a win over Tomáš Berdych of the Czech Republic. In the second singles clash, Štěpánek experienced few troubles beating Andreev in straight sets to level the scores at 1-1. Reverse singles will complete the tie schedule on Sunday. In the NHL, Czech goalkeeper Dominik Hašek led his team, the Detroit Red Wings, to a 4-2 victory over the Nashville Predators on Saturday. The win gives the Red Wings a 2-0 lead in this best-of-seven series against the Predators in the first round of the NHL playoffs. Hašek stopped 25 shots, while fellow Czech and teammate Jiří Hudler notched up 1 assist. And now a quick look at the weather. It'll be cloudier over the next couple of days, but with sunny spells and temperatures ranging between 12 and 16 degrees Celsius. I'm Rosie Johnston, and that's the end of the news.
Welcome to Radio Prague's weekend programming. I'm Dominic Yoon. Today, Mailbox, the show in which we answer listeners' questions and you can learn about the latest listeners' competitions. As always, that is hosted by Pavla Horáková. And we also have this week's Letter from Prague, this time from Ruth Franková. After that, it's Czech Books, in which David Vaughan describes the work of Richard Weiner. But let's start with Mailbox, and here's Pavla Horáková.
And welcome to Mailbox, the programme for your comments and questions. Regular listeners may remember that in February we aired an appeal by Colm Lowry from Northern Ireland, who's writing a book about the end of World War II. He was particularly interested in any information about Obergruppenführer Hans Kammler, who was reportedly in the vicinity of Prague in early May 1945. Last week we got an email from Bill Donegan from the United States. He saw the article on our website and says he knew Kammler's driver during the war. We have forwarded the message to Mr. Lowery and hopefully the information will be useful for his book. In an interesting coincidence, this week we received a number of emails on the same topic. Visitors to our website were interested to find out whether an article they read, for example, on the Czech language pages of Radio Prague's website, also existed in English. One of them was Kyle Joseph.
I'm currently looking for information on the history of the Letohradek Hvězda. and found a link to your website dated from September 2006 by Zdenka Kuchinova. Unfortunately for me, the information was reported in Czech, which I understand little and speak even less, and I've tried in vain to locate its English equivalent on your website. Was it translated into English? If yes, could you please send me the corresponding link?
Similarly, Robert Kish from Hungary writes,
I'm interested in learning Czech online. I'm using a Czech online program and I find your site very useful. I'm writing to you because I'm looking for a direct English to Czech dual text with Czech audio files with news and so on. It would be great if you could offer me some such text, perhaps with some grammar contents on your internet site.
And finally, a similar email came from Eva Ehrlich from the United States, who found an article on the Czech pages of Radio Prague dealing with an aspect of the Czech language.
I think the article is a very valuable explanation of the Czech language custom. I would like to read more on this subject, i.e. Czech superlatives versus English ones. Good in Czech may equal at least excellent in English. This is actually a very important point, whether you send a recommendation for a student or employee, or describe a situation or someone's work, or are selling a house. But I would like it in English.
The six language sections of Radio Prague work independently as far as the choice of daily stories and features is concerned. There are no articles that will be direct translations. They may cover the same topics, but will always be written differently, using different interviews and covering slightly different angles. Therefore, there are no exact matches or dual versions of texts to be found on Radio Prague's website. But as regards learning Czech with the help of English, the English section has plenty to offer. Our current Czech language series, Sound Czech, runs on Saturdays, and the complete series can be found in sound and text on our website. Our previous series, the ABC of Czech, Czech by Numbers, and Czech from Head to Toe, are also available on our website. And some of your queries may be answered in the English section's old Czech language series, Living Czech, which is available in Radio Prague's archives. All the links can be found in the transcript of this mailbox program. And speaking of archives, Stephen Herebenach from Ohio was sorry to hear that David Vons from the archives is taking a break.
I was sad to hear that From the Archives on March 27th was the last of the current series, but then I was relieved to hear that it will be back at a later time. I think that David Vaughan has done a brilliant job with this series, and I've been looking forward to Thursdays to hear the next edition. Radio Prague has spoiled me with such wonderful programming.
And Ian Morrison from China also mentions the program in his letter.
I can't believe it, but it's over 20 years since I started listening to Radio Prague. I'm delighted that after all those years, you're still going strong. And, thanks to the wonders of modern technology, I can listen to you loud and clear via the internet here at my home in Beijing. Just out of curiosity, can I ask you if Radio Prague has many listeners to its shortwave broadcasts in China? I've never been able to pick you up in China on my shortwave radio, but maybe it's not good enough or there is some problem with my antenna. Also, many thanks for the From the Archives series. I'm particularly interested in history, so this gives a fascinating insight into key events in the 20th century Czech history. Here's another question for you. What do Czechs think of Emil Hácha?
Well, that's a question for a longer program, for example, a Czechs in history. But Radio Prague has dealt with Emil Hácha, the country's president during the German wartime occupation, to some extent in a number of programs in the past. To answer Ian's first question, listeners from China regularly take part in the monthly competitions, and we also get plenty of reception reports from China every month. Before I say goodbye, let me repeat our listeners' competition question for April. The question must be extremely easy, as we have already received dozens of answers since last Sunday. Our mystery lady was born in Prague in 1932. As a student of medicine, she took up the discus and won gold at the Melbourne Olympics in 1956. There she fell in love with the American gold medal-winning hammer thrower. The couple got married in Prague, but she was no longer allowed to represent communist Czechoslovakia. At the subsequent four Olympic Games, she represented the United States and even carried the US flag at the opening ceremony of the 1972 Munich Olympics. Please send us your answers, as usual, to english@radio.cz or Radio Prague 12099 Prague. I'd like to remind you that you can also take part in Radio Prague's annual writing contest, this year also concerning Czech sport. All the details can be found on our website or in our programs throughout the week. Until next Sunday, take care.
And now it's time for this week's Letter from Prague with Ruth Frankova.
Unfortunate circumstances have forced me to spend more time in hospitals in recent weeks than I would like to, although I was lucky to be only a visitor, not a patient. Still, going to hospitals is usually not a cheerful experience, unless you are visiting a friend who has just had a baby. The dimly lit corridors and smell of germicide make me feel uneasy as soon as I open the door. However, in spite of this grim atmosphere, there is something rather nice about old hospital buildings in Prague. There are two vast hospitals in the center of Prague, the Vinohrady Hospital and the University Hospital near Karlovo Náměstí. Both of them are surrounded by walls, but the premises are usually open to pedestrians. If you know your way around, you can take a nice shortcut between the Vinohrady and Vršovice districts, right through the Vinohrady Hospital. There is also a lovely garden commonly known as Bláznovská zahrada, or the Fool's Garden, adjacent to the psychiatric ward of the University Hospital. Its doors remain open on weekdays, and you can avoid walking along the busy Ječná Street. The University Hospital close to Karlovo Náměstí offers some unusual and lovely views of Prague. Most of the windows are overlooking Prague's Botanical Garden, and they offer impressive views of Vyšehrad in the sunset. Below Vyšehrad Hill, right by the river, is one of Prague's most beautiful hospital buildings, the Maternity Hospital in Podolí. With its towers and wings, it looks more like a castle. There is also a rather solemn but impressive-looking neo-Gothic building designed by the Czech architect and philanthropist Josef Hlávka. There have been attempts in the past to turn some of the old hospital buildings into hotels. For myself, I hope it will never happen. Hospital premises in the city centre are one of the last islands of greenery in Prague, with squirrels and birds and stray cats wandering around. One day I was passing through the hospital in Prague's Krč district when I suddenly spotted a herd of about 30 goats lying on the patch of grass in front of one of the wards. For a while I thought they were statues, but as I got closer, I noticed they were all watching me, silently chomping on grass. If I ever have to spend a time in hospital as a patient, with nothing better to do than stare out of the window for the whole day, this is what I hope to see. I believe a sight like this can always make you feel a little better.
And that was Ruth Frankova there. Now it's time for Czech Books, in which David Vaughan describes the work of the 20th century poet and writer Richard Wagner.
A very warm welcome again to Czech Books, and we're going to be talking today about a Czech writer of the first half of the 20th century, Richard Wagner, who was immensely influential on his generation of writers, and yet today is little read, little known outside the Czech Republic, and even within the Czech Republic, he is not one of the household names among writers of the period of the so-called First Republic. But this neglect is very much undeserved, and one person who's been trying to draw attention to Richard Wagner is Martin Tharp, and I'm joined now by Martin. So Martin, what made you interested in this almost forgotten First Republic Czech writer, Richard Wagner?
I would first say that he's not almost forgotten, but that he's definitely a kind of minority taste. He was officially neglected during the years of normalization. Not that they disapproved of him for anything that he wrote. He wasn't in any way a programmatic anti-communist or even had much of a definite political position most of the time. However, they did disapprove of him simply for being Jewish, cosmopolitan, and modernist.
And that was enough to be going against the grain of socialist realism of virtually the whole period of the post-war.
That's true. And at the same time, I think it's not even so much a question of communist ideology, but that he went so much against even a kind of Czech national self-conception. For one thing, he was very closely tied to artistic life within Paris, where he lived as the Lidové noviny correspondent. throughout the 1920s up until the end of the 1930s.
I think this is an important point to make, isn't it, that he was a Czech writer, but that he spent most of his active life and career outside the country.
That's true, mostly in Paris. And what's also interesting is, at the time when Czech literature and art looked towards Paris for its chief inspiration, he was actually there, and he knew people. Every time that a new book by Proust would come out, he would review it in Lidové noviny for that very week, even before it was translated. At the same time, though, he was writing his own literary work, which is really what his reputation stood, even though his journalism is, of course, when today it makes such absolutely wonderful reading that you don't want to pick up a newspaper.
I think this would be a nice opportunity to hear you reading a short extract from maybe some of his journalistic work from Paris in the 1920s.
Just to put it in perspective, this was published in a daily newspaper of the pre-war period, so. In a single life, the average person reads many a stupid book, sees countless bad theatre productions and hears endless hours of poor music, and so often trembles in convulsions before all sorts of colour imprints, that likewise he sees films that are foolish, falsely comic, falsely tragic. Indeed, so many types of tastelessness and idiocy saturate our lives. Let this be taken as fully valid coinage. If, though, one meets with the most stupid of stupidities, that knows whereof it is, and nonetheless hopes to amuse one, the reaction is to rise up in indignation against such a suggestion. For there is, for me, nothing more unbearable than when a fool has the daring to take me for a greater one. As far back as my memory can reach, I cannot remember having met with greater idiocy than now exists in the cinema. And that it precisely transpired in cinematography pains me, since up to now I've held it in esteem.
So we can see there that he was an outspoken critic.
Very definitely. But at the same time as this, his own writing, both in prose and in poetry, is very different. He started off as a poet. And I should add, though he was from a Jewish family, much like that of Kafka, he was not from Prague, but from the provincial town of Písek in South Bohemia, an area where almost exclusively Czech was spoken, even though he was, by and large, bilingual in German. Secondly, when he started off as a poet before World War I, most of his poetry was fairly lyrical and romantic, celebrating the strength of nature, and that all lasted up until he was mobilized, first in 1913 to Bosnia, then part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and then, again, after the attack in Sarajevo, he was sent back to the front. He suffered a nervous breakdown, was invalided out of service, and during that time he wrote what I would consider to be his first truly mature work. It is a series of stories from his experience in the war, the horror of modern trench warfare. And after that, also in the immediate post-war years, he completed his second volume of short stories called Shkleb, or The Grimace, which is, in my view, probably one of the finest things that he wrote. And after that, he stopped. He stopped with creative work altogether, went to Paris, wrote his pieces for Lidové noviny, and didn't seem to want to do anything more than that.
This changed when Weiner introduced his friend, the Czech painter Josef Šíma, to some of his French artist and writer acquaintances, most importantly René Daumal and Roger-Gilbert Lecomte, who were both interested in the ideas of the Surrealists, but at the same time had doubts about the Marxist and anti-religious tone of André Breton's Surrealism. Unlike Breton, they felt that they could reach other poetic realms, not just through the dream, but even through mysticism or religious ecstasy. This encounter led to the emergence of the group called Le Grand Jeu, the Big Game. From the start, Weiner played an important role in the group, in the process falling in love with the much younger Lecomte. The encounter was to influence his literary career.
He also returned to writing poetry, and eventually to his last volume of prose. But the one thing to remember is that after his two final prose volumes, he increasingly suffered from stomach trouble. It actually turned out to be cancer of the stomach. And in 1936, he left Paris, returned to Prague, moved in with his sister, and within a year, he was dead, almost as if he knew what was coming.
As somebody of Jewish origin, he would have been unlikely to have survived the Holocaust in Prague.
Yes, that's true.
I think the time has come for another extract from maybe one of his stories. What have you chosen here for us?
I've chosen one called The Voice in the Telephone, and it is from the volume Shkleb, The Grimace. I should begin by explaining the plot of it. It is the story of a man who refers to himself as a hermit of the metropolis, solitary confirmed bachelor, who one day, sitting in his usual chair in the cafe, is called to the telephone. And a mysterious female voice on the telephone says to him, "I'm in love with you, but I can't reveal who I am." In fact, throughout the story, he never finds out who this person is. This is from the middle of the story.
And given that it's a dialogue, you're going to be reading it together with Rachel Mikosh.
"This joke has gone a bit stale. I know that the unknown woman was you."
"Is that what you believe?"
"More than believe, no."
"Then all that I can do now is to disappear forever, for you have betrayed me."
"I betrayed you?"
"Yes, for you do not believe the only thing that is reality, the word."
"You promised me a sign. Now give it."
"I have given you countless signs for you to believe that I am who I am."
"I never noticed one of them, and asked you in vain for a sign that was apparent. In addition, I have no doubts that you are who you are." After a pause, she spoke.
"This is no time for jesting. Was it not I who started this fermentation in your mind? Was I not the cause of it, when upon that one day you noticed how long the path may be towards others, yet for all that a path of which you had never known before? Was I not the cause of it, when you began to notice with much closer attention things diminutive and subordinate? Who else but I whipped up within you that desire, and the question of whether you are indeed attractive to women, and why, then, do you persist along that course that leads nowhere, unless it is to death?"
That was an extract from Richard Wagner's The Voice in the Telephone. And Martin, there's a very distinct quality of Kafka in this writing. There is a clear similarity, isn't there?
I would say very definitely it's similar to Kafka. But at the same time, you could also find so many other references in this, because he bore so much of the world of Habsburg Vienna within himself, and at the same time was able to touch upon equally the world of French modernism, of the great importance of the dream and the unconscious and the unknowable, the way that he was able within his life to bring these two elements together really does mark him out as a kind of genius of the 20th century. But at the same time, he really is, because of it, outside of even the main currents of Czech modernism, which were too young to be called up for military service mission, born around 1900, and they simply saw the New World, the post-war order, as a kind of ecstatic liberation, which Wagner never did. He never could have. And of course, for that reason, their ecstatic liberation included an enchantment with Marxism, and later, in the cases of many of them, they turned into complete cultural functionaries after the communist coup, a form of mental coarseness which Wagner never had, which made him perhaps more influential for dissident literary life in the 70s and 80s, that he was, to an extent, rediscovered during that time as someone who did not succumb to these siren songs of modernity.
And he has never been translated into English.
That's something I've always found strange, that no one has yet taken him up, possibly because his own command of Czech is very unusual. Had a great love for archaic forms of grammar, even deliberate archaisms of style that at the time that he wrote must have sounded more than a bit strange or backwards.
And you've taken up the challenge of translating some of his work.
I've done so, I think, because he really is a kind of European mind that brings in the experience of trench warfare in Serbia, of cafes of a provincial capital of the Habsburg Empire, and a close connection with the Parisian avant-garde, as well as just the fact that his stories are just so enjoyable to read at the end of the day.
Martin, thank you very much indeed.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
And that's all for today. Just a reminder, www.radio.cz is the website to visit for all the latest news and information from us. And we welcome any comments or questions you may have, so please feel free to drop us a line. The postal address is Vinohradska 12, 12099, Prague 2. The address for emails is english@radio.cz. My name is Dominic Yun, and thanks for listening.